rather smug at the moment. I hardly dare look at the Australians and New Zealanders in the congregation. But we have a curate called Mark Thomas, which tells you everything about him. And so it actually is quite a relief that he and I don't actually have to face each other this Sunday, whatever the result is of England v. Wales. So thank you. The Americans and the Canadians are looking slightly as if they're not quite sure what this is all about. And I know there's some of you here. But it's wonderful to be here, and thank you so much for your invitation. We're thrilled to be with you and sense the life that's in this church, in this family, from the moment that we walked in. You know, we visit a lot of churches, we speak in a lot of churches, and we know the history of the ones we've been in. And you can tell very easily and quickly when the Lord is here and his Spirit is with us. So thank you. We're really looking forward to it. Those, incidentally, do you know the Englishman, the Irishman, the Welshman and the Scotsman? No doubt they were good rugby-playing Christians, who all said what it was that they loved about the Christian gospel. The Englishman said he loved the gospel because he loved to argue about it. The Irishman said he loved the gospel because he loved to fight about it. The Welshman said he loved the gospel because he loved to sing about it. And the Scotsman said he loved the gospel because it's free. Now, having just, in one way or another, alienated about everybody in the world.
Yeah,
we're
going a lot of support.
The gospel is worth arguing for in the right way. It's certainly worth contending for in a gracious way. It's certainly worth singing about. And it is free. But we're going to look over these next few talks at some of the encounters that Jesus had in John's Gospel, and we're going to write back to the very beginning and the call of the disciples at the end of John's Gospel, chapter 1. So whether or not you've got a Bible, don't worry if you haven't, you'll probably know this story quite well. But I'm going to read from John's Gospel, chapter 1, and we'll pick it up in verse 38. Jesus turned round, verse 38 of John chapter 1, and saw two disciples following him and said to them, "What are you seeking?" And they said to him, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" He said to them, "Come and you will see." So they came and saw where he was staying. And they stayed with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. One of the two who heard John, that had been John the Baptist speaking, and followed Jesus, was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first found his own brother Simon and said to him, "We have found the Messiah," which means Christ. He brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Cephas," which means Peter. Jesus, the next day, decided to go to Galilee. And he found Philip and said to him, "Follow me." Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew, and Peter. And Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said to him, "Come and see." Jesus saw Nathanael coming towards him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no deceit." Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" And Jesus answered, "Before Philip called you when you were under the fig tree, I saw you." And maybe we could start fairly simply, because wherever we are in our Christian journey, whether or not we're good at verbalizing our Christian faith and expressing it in one way or another, whether or not we think we've arrived spiritually, and the truth is that none of us have, we're all on a journey. Wherever we've got to, all of us can do two things. We can draw near to Christ ourselves, just as Jesus invited Simon, it was, first of all. Simon. And said to him, come and see. Come. And it was a promise, actually, you will see. And all of us, however far we are along the journey, can respond to that invitation ourselves, to come, to draw near to Christ, and to see more of him. And I hope, I believe, in fact, I expect, I trust, that in lots of different ways, that's what's brought you here this weekend. Not just to be with one another, but to come and see something of Christ and his work in your life. So that's the first thing. We can come and see Christ ourselves. We can draw near to him. But then secondly, we can draw other people to come and see him. And we had both of those in our readings in verse 39. Jesus says, come and see. Come and see me. And then in verse 46, Philip says to Nathanael, come and see. Uses the same words, you see, he picked them up so quickly. Come with me, and you'll see what I have seen. So there's immediately a kind of bifocal vision, if you like, for this weekend to be looking inwards, ourselves drawing near to Christ, coming back to him, coming maybe for the first time to him, wherever we are. Maybe some of us are still looking at the Christian life, as it were, in through a window from the outside. Or we've just made tentative steps towards Christ. Or we've been a Christian for many years and we've come to draw near to him again, to come back. So that's the first part of the vision. And the second part is, in whatever way we can, not just to look inwards, but also to look outwards. To be thinking already on a weekend like this of the places where we work, the friends that we have, the contacts, in your case, in Vevey and beyond. To be thinking of those who have not yet discovered the joy, the wonder of knowing Christ, and the possibility of the invitation to them, to say to them, come and see. You see, God has placed us among those that we have friendships with and worked with, friends new and old, even chance, as it were, contacts. He's placed us where we are because it may make a difference in their lives, the contact that we have with them, that could last forever. And it's good to dwell on this. You know, sometimes we ask ourselves, or another Christian, we ask, why did you choose to follow Christ? And it's often fascinating to hear the different answers to that question. But it's important to ask the question the other way round. Not, why did you choose to follow Christ? But why did Christ choose you to follow him? And one of the greatest answers to that question is that we could in turn invite others, come and see. And so straight away, you may find this rather odd on a weekend when we've all come to, as it were, to come away from our normal lives. But I wonder if you'd allow me to particularly focus on the second part of that bifocal vision straight away. Not the looking inwards, we'll do some of that tomorrow, but the looking outwards. And I want to say this is not a burdensome or fearful or difficult thing. It doesn't require theological rocket science. We don't need to be odd or fanatical or weird. But to say to those around us in the most natural, easy, and tremendously enjoyable way, come and see. Now, very briefly, because it's a Friday evening, and well, you're not actually looking terribly tired. You're looking rather sharp. But here are four simple encouragements that we can all take, even this evening. And the first encouragement from this story is, we can start where we are. We can start where we are. First, do you see, if you've got a Bible open, or if you remember what I've just read, in verse 40 we're told Andrew, one of the two who had followed Jesus, came to follow Christ. And then, verse 41, the first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, we have found the Messiah. That is the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus. One famous bishop wrote in the margin of his Bible, beside that verse, the greatest thing any person can do for another. The first thing he did was he brought him to Jesus. The greatest thing any person can do for another. But then Philip, who'd only started to follow Jesus a matter of hours himself, he went away and, verse 45, found Nathanael and told him the same. We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law. He started right where he was. And the encouragement, I think, is this, that, you know, you and I don't need to wait. We don't need to wait before we say to those around us, I'm discovering something in the Christian faith. Why don't you come with me? I'd love to share some of that amongst the people with whom I've also been discovering it. Now, of course, some people don't want to know, so we need sensitivity. But some people do. And we can't tell at first who they are. But the encouragement is that to know the joy of sharing our Christian faith, which is one of the most unparalleled excitements in the Christian life, in life, we don't need to wait. That we can start, as they did, right where we are. Some people think I'm too young in age, or I'm too young in faith to do this sort of thing. But you know, I don't believe that. I suspect the problem with many Christians is not that they're too young to share their faith, but that they're too old in this sense, that love for Christ and the longing to serve him can grow cold. We can start where we are. Secondly, we can share friendship. All of us can do this. We can share friendship. It seems Philip and Nathanael were very close friends. And as close friends do, they talked about the things that they were longing for. Now, this may feel very distant to us, but it seems they talked about what the Old Testament had promised, a king of Israel to set Israel free. And Philip thought he'd found that person, so he went with excitement to his closest friend, Nathanael, and told him his discovery. He said, we have found the one. Now, notice, incidentally, the word we. The same word Andrew had used to Peter, we have found. Andrew was in a position to do this because Simon was his brother, and Philip because he already knew Nathanael. They were from the same town. Now, the point is this. Just think round this room. Different groups of friends represented in this room, friends that we have out there, are looking for different things in life. Some people are looking for truth, others for adventure, yet more for a purpose and meaning in life. Some people are looking for happiness, for lasting friendships. Some people know they need forgiveness, the curing of guilt. Some the foundation for a lifelong marriage, others for values with which to raise a family. All the people we know, they're all looking for different things in life. And the wonderful thing is that Christ brings all these things and many more besides. You see, Philip talked to Nathanael about the things that they had both been looking for in life. So when we talk with friends, people at work and so on, when we listen to other people's stories, we can listen out for what they're searching for in life. And if appropriate, share how we have discovered something of a way forward in that area of life. Or an answer to prayer, or a need that was met through the Christian community that we're part of, or an answer in the Bible, or a personal healing, or a way that God has guided us. We can share these things. And when such opportunities arise, begin to say how in Jesus we're finding some of the things in life that you and maybe they too have been looking for. And all of us can do this. We can share friendship. Here's a third thing that we can all do, and this is a great relief. We can, by and large, avoid argument. We can avoid argument. You see, I've left something out in the story. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, it's in verse 45 if you've got your Bible, we have found, not as I pointed out, I have found, but we have found, and there's something immensely attractive, isn't there? About a group of people and the witness of a group of people, not just an individual, who are discovering life in community. And as soon as Philip began to share his story, Nathanael said, verse 46, Nazareth? Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Do you see? Question. Objection. And Philip, it seems, didn't have a clue how to answer the question. But it didn't put him off. He didn't stop and argue. He just said, come and see. And this is the encouragement that we don't need to know all the answers to all the questions people are asking before we invite them to join the journey across along the Christian life that we've embarked upon. Now, it helps if we do read some books which will help us discover some of the answers to some of the questions people are asking. They're probably questions we're asking as well. But we don't have to wait before we invite people to come and see what it means to follow Christ. Now, this is a huge relief, isn't it? It reminds us that the Christian faith is not views, but news. We're not giving our views and asking, do you agree with us? But news, and have you heard it? And as someone put it, the Christian faith is good news, not good advice. And we're not to try to make the gospel relevant to people, but to show that the gospel has a relevance to people's lives. It has for us, and it can for others as well. Archbishop William Temple famously said, the task of the church is not to ask what Jones will swallow, but to declare to Jones what there is to eat. That's good, isn't it? And in fact, there's something very disarming and attractive, don't you find this, about saying, I don't know all the answers, but I've met the one who does. And I'm just beginning to learn some of the answers from him. Now, don't misunderstand, we need to go on and learn. But we don't need to be put off just because we don't know the answers to the objections people have to the faith. So start where we are, share friendship, avoid argument, and fourthly, finally, and most wonderfully, we can trust Jesus. We can trust Jesus himself. From verse 47 onwards, Philip fades out of the picture altogether. And he leaves Jesus to talk directly to Nathanael. And Jesus knows all about him. And Nathanael was amazed. He says, verse 48, how do you know me? Do you notice that? Not how do you know that, but how do you know me? Now, what made him say that? Well, in verse 47, when Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, presumably in his hearing, here is a true Israelite in whom there is nothing false, no deceit. Before Philip found him, it seems that Nathanael had been sitting under a fig tree all by himself and thinking. And it looks as if he'd been thinking about one particular person in the history of Israel, namely Jacob. I say it seems because at the end Jesus compares himself to Jacob, who had a dream about a ladder. And we'll look at that story tomorrow. And Nathanael was puzzled because God had used Jacob, who was the most twisted con man, a cheat and a deceiver. His name meant literally grasper from his birth when he was delivered, seizing his twin Esau by the heel in delivery. And Nathanael didn't understand how God could use such a man, a grasper, who cheated even his own brother out of his inheritance. Now, if you know the story, Jacob's name was changed by God. God renamed him Israel, which means literally one who fought with God. And I think Jesus saw Nathanael had these sorts of thoughts buzzing around in his mind. And he knew what Nathanael had been thinking all by himself. And as he sees Nathanael approaching him, he says, here is a true Israelite, descendant of Israel, but one in whom there's nothing false, no deceit. He's not a cheat. And Nathanael was astounded. He said, how do you know me? And the encouragement is this. Jesus reads the innermost thought of every person. He does of us. And he does of our friends as well. And we can trust him to deal directly with them. As he reveals in verse 48, the last verse we read. Before Philip called you, he says to Nathanael, I saw you. I spotted you. And if I can put it like this, Jesus has his eye not just on us, which he does. He's got his eye on us this weekend to bless us. He knows, he reads our innermost thoughts and concerns and needs, our hopes, our desires, our fears. He knows it all. And he can draw aside and bless us and help us and equip us and heal us if we respond to his invitation, come and see. But he also has his eye on all sorts of people around us where we live and work. Friends new and old, even just people we hardly see at all but pass by in the street, meet in the shops, see through school or whatever. And we can't see who they are, we can't spot them. But as we go about our lives, we can pray and trust him to lead us to people who are hungry for God. And maybe we share something of our story and they say, that's what I need. Or they come to a church event and there's a talk and it feels as if the talk was prepared just for them. Now, I guess you all had that experience. I've had that experience where I thought the speaker was speaking directly to me. And they're astonished, as Nathanael was, that's what I've been thinking about, and I haven't told anybody. So our job is to pray and be open and to trust Jesus to lead us to people who are hungry for God. We can't spot them, but he can. And as we pray for those we do know, pray not only for them, but for Jesus to reach their innermost thoughts, right into their situation. So we invite them to the next Alpha course, and I've been told that's probably in January, or to a Christmas event, or something between now and then. And they come, and whoever gives a talk speaks, and they say to themselves, my friend who invited me has betrayed my confidence to him because he's the only person who knows about that. He must have told the speaker. That's what's going on in my mind. Or they may be even more puzzled because they haven't told anybody. Do you see, Jesus has access both to you as a believer, but also to the people around you. And he can make both connections so that when you two make connection, something dynamic can happen. But we can start immediately, we can share friendship, we can avoid argument, and we can trust Jesus to draw people to himself. Now, I don't quite know why I did this, because it's an odd thing to do in the first talk of a weekend when we've all come away. But I thought that's where we might begin. Thinking straight away back into our lives, not just looking in, but looking out. And maybe that'll set something of the tone for the weekend as well. And if we're going to be in a position to be the kind of people who are, as Jesus put it, salt and light to the world around us, inviting others to come and see, then of course, we've got to do that ourselves. So let me come back to the first as we close. Wherever we are, whatever we've come with on this weekend, whatever the joys and excitements and successes, whatever the problems and difficulties and failures, he knows and he reads our innermost thoughts. And he loves us, and he wants to bless us if we will come and draw near to him. Amen.
That's good. So in a moment I'm going to pray, and then after that there are one or two announcements. But just wanted to share a thought with you before we finish up this evening. This is, I reckon, my 11th church weekend with All Saints, and all of them have been very, very special. But one of the things that I've noticed about every